Thank you for joining us for the segment of Notable People with your host, Andrea Schwartz, where we introduce you to some notable people making significant contributions toward furthering the kingdom of Christ.
Today on Notable People, I have the pleasure of talking with a friend. This is a man I met years ago, and I have been blessed to watch how God has used his talent and his vision to further the kingdom of God. My guest today is Colin Gunn. Colin is the father of seven. He heads a homeschooling family. He and his wife have been married 10 years, and Colin was not originally born in the U.S. He is a Scot by birth, but is an American by choice, and has ventured into, in the last 10 years or so, into the area of Christian filmmaking, and two of his previous works won prizes at the San Antonio Independent Film Festival, and he is currently working on another project, which will be a primary focus of our discussion today. Welcome, Colin.
Oh, hi, Andrea. Thank you for having me on your show. I've been looking forward to talking to you again.
That's great. So tell us, Colin, what your latest project is, why you decided to tackle this particular issue, and the progress of where it is now in its state of release.
Well, you know, when we make our independent documentaries, we only have so much time and only so much money. So when we have to pick what is the most important thing, it would be hard to work for years on a project that was on something that wasn't important. So that's our motivation is to do something for the Lord and his kingdom. And I believe the priority for us as Christians is the subject of education. I think as if we're to communicate to the world or to other Christians, the argument against public education and public indoctrination is the primary issue. And so this is our focus right now. And in fact, the movie that we are making right now is called Indoctrination. And it's about how America's public schools have ruined America, have ruined families, have ruined American culture. And this is our argument. We are arguing for people to leave the public schools immediately, and we're going to give them 101 reasons in our movie to do that. there's plenty ammunition that we have. It's interesting in our political climate right now that this is an issue that's starting to become of interest to a lot of people, especially when you have, you know, the Obama administration with its great victory. People are starting to realize, you have the Tea Partiers and all that sort of stuff. So we want to make it clear that for all the stuff that is going on in our culture right now, and all we're seeing a greater antithesis, but the solution isn't in all the small victories that conservatives are seeking. The big victory for us would be for Christians to start to take the issue of education seriously and understand what Christian education is. And that's when they'll realize they have to abandon the public school system.
Okay, so you're a Scot by birth. I know you married an American lady. And,
yes.
And you are now an American citizen, as I mentioned. Who are you to tell America what's wrong with its education system?
That's a good question. Who am I? I think it's good to be an outsider. I've always liked, I think anyone can speak in any issue. I think I don't take any criticism in terms of not being born here, but certainly as an immigrant, you often come to a culture with a greater awareness and open eyes to that culture. And I think I do certainly stand out from maybe your average American Christian. But I would say that's mainly from my theological background rather than just being an immigrant. But I think it does help a touch to be someone who comes from out with a culture, comes in let me give you a good example, the big yellow bus. We didn't have big yellow buses in Scotland. You know, we have a public transport system, and we have people get to school in many varieties of ways, but we never had a symbol. We never had a visual symbol of public schools. You know, even if you came as an outsider into American culture, the public schools are actually very prominent culturally The new buildings, the stadium, sports is another thing that would separate maybe Scottish schools and Scottish life, where sports are generally, you know, soccer and privatized. You come to America, so much of education, or the visual landscape and architectural landscape, you see the establishment of the public education system with its, sports arenas, and all the rest of it. And so the yellow buses and those things make me, there is a difference. I think I do pick them up on other things.
Right. Now, your background, you were born and raised in Scotland. What's the Scottish educational system like in comparison, for example, to America of today?
Well, in Scotland, they will have some religious education in schools, so there is not the we've never had the radical ACLU types who are intent on banning prayers and all that. It's never been an issue, and there's historical reason, I would guess, for that in Scotland. But of course, the religious education aspect of education, it's just tacked on the end and is pretty weak. I went to both public schools or state schools in Scotland, we call them, and then after a few years I started going to a private Christian school. So I got to see in my youth the big contrast between state education and private education, most notably for me in terms of my memories, because my memories of school are small and are weak. I did remember going to state school in Scotland during the Thatcher years, and of course, you know, if you remember Thatcher, she was attacking all the unions, and the unions hated her, and she hated the unions, and of course, I had no idea what was going on at the time, and she was privatizing British Airways, British Gas, you know, and all the mines and all the industries that had been nationalized by the socialists over the years, causing a lot of trouble. But in the schools, the EIS, the teachers' union, had started to do strikes, and they'd started to do these flash strikes. You would show up, and there would be no teachers there. So that was one of my most memorable experiences of school life and the public sector in Scotland, is showing up for school and being absolutely delighted that the teachers teachers weren't there. I probably learned more that day and was done less damage to that day than any of the other days. But I got to see the contrast when I got my parents decided they knew what was wrong with they didn't really have a philosophy behind it, but they knew there was a huge problem in the schools in Scotland, and so they had the wisdom as well as the prosperity to take me out of those schools, take myself and my brother to the private school in Hamilton, Scotland, where I'm from, and just a huge discipline. They still had the cane at the school that I went to, so they had good discipline.
But people, we should probably explain that. That means that if a student get out of control or was defiant or rebellious, he got some rear end correction. Maybe that's
yes,
the way to say
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's the way to say it. And it was, of course, it was more legend than actual fact. The idea of it, and
sure, the symbol was there, the rod of discipline, yes.
The knowledge that someone somewhere had it and it was horrible, and there's all these rumors about how terrible it was. I never saw it, but certainly it was effective, and I was never really a rebellious child anyway, so it was not really a problem. I was more just a slacker.
I see. Okay, so you really do have a perspective in terms of public education in its fullest in a socialistic country where the politics were socialistic, and you even got to see a bit of the tension when somebody tried to move from socialism back to a free market mentality.
Well, yeah, I think it was a privilege. So there's a clarity there when you have experienced both of them. I think that does help me a little bit. When you come, things, there's sort of an interesting thing that American socialism and the American agenda in public schools is not that different when it comes down to compared to Scottish schools. So in terms of the national difference, it's even interesting that there's some philosophers who hugely influence the Scottish schools, guys like Robert Owen, who came over and really influenced the American schools. So there's a lot of commonality.
Okay, so you entitle your documentary Indoctrination, and in the title, nation is in capital letters to make it very obvious from the get-go that you're saying that state schools do not have as their purpose education in the definition of preparing somebody for usefulness in life, but your thesis is that the point is indoctrination.
Yes, they serve those that are indoctrinated, and indoctrination can be used, I guess, in a positive way as well. We do believe that we should indoctrinate our children in a sense, i.e. inculcate a doctrine in their hearts. But what we see, obviously, in state education is that the doctrine that is being put in the hearts of those that go through that system is there to make them worship the state. So the nation state, who pays for the system, of course, it steals the money and redistributes it, is using that system to create secular humanistic statists, and that has been a huge success for them. I mean, we have seen them demolish the church largely, I would argue, through that method. It's not exclusively the only thing that's caused the problems in our church or in our culture, but it's a significant one when we see, you know, 90% or 9 out of 10 children walk away from the faith largely through the influence of the public school system, a continual and repetitive and foundational demolishing of Christian ethics and ideas. That was the goal, of course, of the public education system. If you look at the humanists like Dewey or Horace Mann, the Unitarian, they had a dislike for what we would hold to now as our Calvinistic Christian heritage. They didn't like that. They knew that was the stumbling block to progress, as they would call it. So they wanted progress, and progress for them was to be as far away from God, the living God, as possible. And so they have been successful. And so for Christians, they need to know that. You know, it's interesting that we can sort of persuade people. I think this is why documentary filmmaking is good. You have to put things in front of people's eyes these days. And this is why I think documentary making is so important. And that's why I'm dedicating my life to it in a large part, because I believe we need to put these facts and these ideas in front of people's eyes, because I think, you know, the theory for Christians, they don't quite get it. We're in a visual age. They need to see something, and we're going to show them some of the places and people and do interviews and show them things that are going to make it very difficult for them to go, no, I'm still committed to state education.
Right. And I think it's important for listeners to understand, when you say you've dedicated your life to this, you don't make your living by producing and directing and putting together these documentaries. You have a job that you go to and you work diligently at, and you support your family, and you take your time and a lot of your resources and you put it to these projects. These are not endowed by any organization that funds you to go out and make these documentaries.
No, not at all. It certainly, you know, would be nice to have organizations that were generous like that. We certainly, the last two movies we've made were self-funded, pretty much just from, you know, leftovers from the grocery budget. And the Lord blessed us, and I have had good employment in America, and I've been able to use my time, the spare time I have with seven kids. I find the time, and mostly, and there'll be, just to give you an idea, the most of my life I am working a regular job for 8+ hours, and then in the evening I'll work for another 4 or 5 hours, and that 4 or 5 hours is dedicated to filmmaking. And I really believe in the learn on the job approach to filmmaking, and this is something I've discussed frequently with other people in the industry, that the best way to make a movie is to go and make a movie. You know, there's preparation and there's theory and there's those things, but the best thing is practice, and that's how I've learned. I'm no expert, but I think with the hours I've put in, I've made every mistake that I could possibly make. I've made a lot of mistakes, and I've learned from all the things that I've done. But the best thing for me was just to go and make Shaky Time, for example, and that was a wonderful, wonderful experience. It's not the greatest film in the world, but it's a unique film, I would argue. No one's made a film quite like that in that time and place. And it's interesting how documentaries, when you start to look back, and when you make a documentary, it's, you know, it seems like the news. We make it as a contemporary issue and it's something current. But now I look back and I look at it as history, documented history, and it's actually more valuable now when I look at Shaky Town. Even although it has those imperfections, filmmaking imperfections, it chronicles something very specific. So that's another aspect of the enjoyment of filmmaking.
Right. Now, for those who are not familiar with his movie Shaky Town, Colin lived in California for a while and had an up-close personal experience with the homosexual issue and the same-sex marriage initiatives that were going on in San Francisco, and attended a church that had taken a stand against homosexuality from a biblical point of view. And in his documentary, he not only chronicles a lot of the current events at the time, but you get to hear from the pastor and his wife what sort of persecution they received as a result of taking a biblical stand. And I'll agree with Colin that I have probably seen more sophisticated documentaries, maybe with more cameras at their disposal and greater editing equipment and soundtrack and everything else. But what comes through is the lens of faith that he, the template, if you might say, that he puts on this particular issue. And there's no rancor, there's no hatred that comes through. It's very much a thus saith the Lord. And that's also true with his second documentary that took on the subject of feminism. It was from what I know, it was a subject that was important to his wife because she wanted to make sure that Christian women were heard on the subject of biblical womanhood, etc. And he, you know, did extensive interviews and he let people talk. And that's one of the things that I like about Colin and his brother's documentaries. They let other people talk. And they let you listen in on those conversations. So you're not getting a textbook version of the issue. You're getting primary sources. And he's allowing you to take part in the conversation that he had with these people.
Yeah, it's interesting that when you talk about filmmaking and you start doing filmmaking, you don't realize the depth of decision making that you have to do. There's so many different types of movie you can make, even in the documentary world. There's so many different ways to work, and so we've had to navigate our own, from our own Christian philosophy, start to look at what would make a good Christian filmmaking. And the thing you just mentioned is to let people talk, not to do what Michael Moore does, where he goes and he creates scenes, he grandstands and stands up, you know, makes a big show, whether it's showing up at, you know, GM's headquarters or whatever it was he did in his movies. He very clearly has an agenda, but he pretends that he's neutral. Of course, as Christians, we can't pretend we're neutral. For Michael Moore, he'll go to a subject matter, pretends he doesn't know anything about the subject matter, ask questions, and then he'll pretend that they're revealing, you know, what he believes to him, and oh, the revelation is socialism is the only answer, or whatever it is he's going to argue. For Christians, our philosophy is that we have to be clear about our presuppositions, and we have to make it clear that we're not just neutral in finding out the facts. We're not going out and saying, you know, are public schools good or are they bad? You know, we can't start. And it's funny how many people have asked us to make that kind of documentary. That's what they think a documentary like this would be, and that's how people are going to be convinced, because we have to pretend we're neutral, and we're not neutral. We start with the Bible, and of course the Bible's clear in education that it's in the domain of the family and not in the domain of the state. So that's our beginning. But you can go from that and then ask questions about application and ask what people think. And I like to go to the enemy as well and ask what they think, and not to make them look foolish, just to make it clear, the antithesis clear, is make the antithesis obvious to people. And we do that in our movies. We're hoping to go to talk to, you know, union leaders and public school teachers in our movie, not to make them look foolish, but to make it clear how they would argue. That's always the most interesting thing to me, because I can make good arguments for most everything in our movies, but it's always how do they defend what they do, and I think that's what I like to get.
Right. And I think what an important aspect of that is it's easy to, you know, show a photograph of someone you don't agree with in a compromised position or making a silly face or even highlighting the mistakes that somebody makes when he or she speaks. I make mistakes all the time. And because I'm a Christian, it doesn't mean I don't make those mistakes. It just means that more often than not, if a Christian is putting together a film or an article, they're not going to illustrate or they're not going to highlight that. So I like the idea of letting the person in his best frame of mind, with the lighting being good, with the microphones being clear, have that person state his or her thesis, and now we get to compare the ideas of the Bible to the ideas of other systems of looking at life.
Absolutely. Right. I think that's been that's an effective way to do filmmaking. One of the other aspects of Christian filmmaking or documentary filmmaking is the idea of making it a narrative as well, and that's something we're focusing on with Indoctrination, which we didn't really do with Shaky Town and Monstrous Regiment. And in both those films, we didn't really have a clear structure, you know, and I think that's obvious when you see them. If you think about that when you watch them, that was where we were really learning about storytelling. Storytelling is now our focus for Indoctrination, and that's where I believe the strength of documentary films are, and good documentary filmmaking will follow a narrative to a sense, and will be more scripted. Not in the sense that we make people say things that they won't say, but we kind of know the direction of the movie and the beats of the movie and the heart of the movie through a lot of pre-planning and so forth. Indoctrination, we're following a narrative, and that we're also borrowing a motif from movies or a genre of movies called the road trip movie. And the road trip movie is a movie that's been made many times in American cinematic history. We're going to make it and use that for our movie, which is us going around America in a yellow bus, a school bus. Uh-huh. And as we do that, we set up very clearly our philosophy and what we think, but we go and find out how did America get to the place that it's at from education, and we'll go to places like Columbine and New Harmony and Boston and quite a few other places just to explore those questions. And as we go along the way, we will have many interviews with people that are experts and also many people that aren't, and people that just have stories to tell about their relationship with public education.
And I have seen some of the uncut version of your interviews, and I can tell you that as somebody who has been involved in Christian education, specifically Christian homeschooling now for almost 3 decades, I can tell you that I find the interviews compelling, and I like the scattering of perspectives and orientations. You'll have somebody who has homeschooled their children. You'll have somebody who's a lawyer. You'll have somebody else who is a theologian. You'll have somebody else who's an economist, and bringing all these things together. But one of the things I'd like to comment on before we leave, and I told you at the beginning, I didn't know that 30 minutes was going to be enough time, and I can see the clock ticking, but it's, we live in an age where, quite frankly, with the technology and a little bit of training, anybody can make a movie. Mm-hmm. It's certainly come out of the ivory tower of movie making and individuals, but I would submit that that's not enough. And I happen to know that your background and my background in terms of how we came to a full-orbed application of the faith for life came as a result of reading Rush Dooney's books and Chalcedon and other authors, because it's important to have a foundation from which to use your talents. And I was wondering if you could comment a little bit about that.
Well, certainly the vision of what you want to do is that's what's your main objective, and why are you seeking to make a movie? There's sort of a glamour attached to movies, really wrongly, because it's certainly not glamorous when you're actually making movies. It's very painful and difficult and time consuming. So I think when we look at filmmaking, and yes, there's the technology is available, and that's a great gift from God. It's almost like the printing press coming on the scene, and all of a sudden we can print Bibles. Not quite as important as that, I'm sure, but certainly the internet combined with the other digital technology that we can can create media. And of course, with media in America, it's almost completely consumed by the secularists and monopolized by the secularist humanists. So we can now produce really good quality stuff, which would have cost, you know, millions before. It can cost, you know, tens of thousands now. But it's in terms of what do you want to say, you have to really examine your own heart and examine your subject matter well. And I do encourage people to really think about documentary filmmaking, because it is one of the simplest genres of filmmaking and a great place for anyone to start if they're interested. But yeah, what are they going to say? And I think it was certainly through Rush Dooney, through the training that I had as a young man in a church, that gave me an optimistic worldview. That I do believe that what you do in this world will have an effect. That the Lord can bless these projects, and I really believe that He has blessed our projects, Shaky Town and Monstrous Regiment, and that He will bless Indoctrination. That we're being faithful to Him in our sphere, and that's what's interesting now. We are now getting to a stage where we can start to talk about. We could have talked about it before, but now we can actually say, you know, how do Christians reign in the sphere of filmmaking? And practically that's what not just myself, but many others, you know, hundreds, maybe thousands of people in America are doing that faithfully, looking at how does God reign? How does Christ reign over the realm of filmmaking? And that's what we're doing.
Right. And I think what applies in filmmaking applies in the arts in general, and in the occupations and professions, et cetera. You mm-hmm. have a biblical understanding of something, and now with the particular circumstance that God has placed you and the desire that He places in your heart to further His kingdom, then with that good foundation, there really is no limit to the kind of influence we can have in the culture, because if we're on a solid biblical foundation, that will make for success. That would be the definition of success.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's certainly there's those that will see success in filmmaking as, you know, getting a cinematic release or, you know, multiple screens and making a lot of money. And it's usually the focus is very quickly on a lot of money. Now, certainly that is usually part of success or reaching a lot of people is to make money. But certainly there's so many small stories. And this is what I tell people when they're, if they have remote interest in documentary filmmaking, is that the stories are right next to you. You know, the stories that you can tell about the Lord is the work that the Lord is doing in your life or the lives of your friends or the history of your grandparents or whatever it is that is close to you. That is the kind of work that can be done easily and, you know, well, if you dedicate some time to it. When we start to look, you know, we understand history as God's providence. When we start to think of history as God's providence and Him working and seeing His power expressed, we can start to look at documentary filmmaking in a way too. When we're documenting the work of the Lord, and even although we might be coming out and fairly passively interviewing people or walking around asking people questions, then you can still really show how the Lord can be working. And so I think that's what's going to encourage other people as well. So that's why I try and get people to think about what are the stories closest to them that they can work on.
Right. I had it explained to me once years ago before MTV was big. I took one of the songs that I loved that Judy Rogers had recorded, mm-hmm. and I said it would be nice to put this to kind of what I guess what amounted to a PowerPoint, although at the time we were just doing a sequence of slides. And the story was simple. We called it Mama, Please Don't Cry, after the song she had written. And it just basically says, the one person who liked it said, a simple story simply told. Mm-hmm. And that's the way in which you can have a great impact, that you don't try to put all sorts of bells and whistles to be impressive to the world, because quite frankly, most of us aren't in a position to compete with the million-dollar budgets that people have. But we have something that's far more wealth-generating and wealthy, and that's the Holy Spirit guiding our efforts. And so I wouldn't discourage anybody from participating either in their own filmmaking. But I think for a lot of people who like the idea of Christian filmmaking, I think that they would be blessed by God by blessing your efforts. Why don't you tell people how they can help with the funding of Indoctrination?
Well, yeah, as I've said earlier, we have self-funded up till now. Now we have a bigger project that we do need some help with, and so we are looking for sponsors, but there is a way that the ordinary person can help us, and one of the ways we're doing that is through a backstage pass for our movie, and by buying the backstage pass, which is only $50, you'll actually get a DVD, so you'll get the movie itself. You will also get access to all of our interview footage, and actually that's one of the coolest things about documentary film making. We only use a very small amount of footage from each interview, but these interviews are from some of the giants of the faith in America. We have Samuel Blumenfeld, Doug Phillips, Herb Titus, Gary North, and a bunch of other guys who are just, you know, top-notch experts in this area. And their teaching is superb, and so we're putting up those in a sort of just, you know, basic form, a little bit edited, but just, you know, pretty much the whole content of the interview. So we're putting that up there. You also get Monstrous Regiment and Shaky Town as a download for free, and we're going to be sort of documenting as we go on the road. We'll be doing putting up some producer footage as well, which is myself and my other producer, Joaquin Fernandez, who's working on this project with me. So the backstage pass is a real way to help us. All the money that we get from that goes directly into our expenses, which would be things like the bus or gas for the bus or equipment or, you know, things we need to buy on the road. Those are the sort of things that have made this project out of our range in terms of our own budget. So that would be a great way to gift us and help us. We are looking for ministry sponsors as well, and we can talk to anyone who'd be interested in having advertising in the movie, at the front of the movie or on the bus itself. So that's another area that people might be interested in.
So tell us how we could get in touch with you to do this if we were so glad to do so.
If they want to, you can go to indoctrinationmovie.com, and the backstage is up there. But if they want to get in touch with me personally, you can email me at colin@colingunn.com.
Excellent. And I'm hoping that our listeners will take a look at your website and get a sense of what you're all about. And I'm sure that there's a good percentage that will be just as enthusiastic as I am to see how God's going to bring this project to completion. As it stands right now, what's your anticipated completion date for it?
We're looking probably closer to the end of the year. We have to get on the road this summer, we're still under budget in terms of being able to get on the road. And we'll put more information about the needs up on the website soon. So we're still heading towards that goal of being on the road probably in July, maybe August, and then post-production, which can be difficult to predict in terms of how we want it to look. But we're looking more likely the end of the year as the completion date.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for spending some time today. I always enjoy speaking with you
because
of what you have to say, but I love your voice and I love listening to you. So I'm looking forward to seeing you in the movie as well.
That's great. Thank you, Andrew.
You're welcome. God bless.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Visit us on the web at www.notablepeople.org.